You're listening to the Angela Henderson Online Business Show, episode 444. Hey there, you amazing human, and welcome to the Angela Henderson Online Business Show, the podcast that is designed for female entrepreneurs who want to make more money in a way that is in alignment for them. If you're looking for practical advice, proven strategies, and expert insights to help you navigate the challenges of growing your business, then you've come to the right place. Welcome, my friend. I am your host, Angela Henderson, a proud Canadian living in beautiful Australia, and I'm a business coach, consultant, and strategist who has helped thousands of women around the world build successful businesses. Through solo episodes and interviews with successful business owners, industry experts, and thought leaders, you'll get insider insights into what it takes to succeed in today's digital age. Whether you're struggling to scale your business, looking for ways to boost your productivity, or seeking ways to overcome the challenges of being an entrepreneur, this show has everything you need to succeed and more. So subscribe, pop your headphones on, and get ready to creating the business and life you deserve today by allowing the Angela Henderson Online Business Show help you create a winning strategy, develop the right mindset, and build lasting wealth. Hey there, you amazing human, and welcome back to another awesome episode of the Angela Henderson Online Business Show. I'm your host, Ange, from Angela Henderson Consulting, where I've helped thousands of women around the world create business strategy, master their mindset, and create a life of freedom. Now, today's conversation is one I know is going to hit home for so many of you, especially if you're already running a successful business, but feel like there's an invincible ceiling holding you back from your next level income. We're going to be diving into the topic of money identity, what it really means, how it's formed, and why it's the key to scaling your business with confidence, without the hustle, and with more certainty in your decisions. Joining me is the incredible Anne Ryan, who has built a multi-seven-figure offline business by keeping things simple. And she did this while raising her kids, caring for her aging parents, and running a construction company. Now she mentors female entrepreneurs to simplify their business, shift their money mindset, and step into a conscious wealth. Because when women claim their power and build wealth on their own terms, they change everything. So in today's episode, we'll unpack the most common money beliefs that hold women back from scaling, how childhood money stories play into our current patterns, the role self-esteem has in pricing, practical steps you can take right now to shift your money mindset and step into your next level income without burning out. So whether you're just starting to look at your money beliefs or you're ready to break through your next level, this episode is going to give you the clarity and confidence you've been waiting for. Hey, 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 welcome to the show, Anne.
Hello, Angela. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh my goodness. I'm super excited. I looked at the clock and I was like, oh shit, it's 1:13. We really probably need to press record. But as I was saying before we press record, there's always something so awesome connecting with other good humans who we were talking about simplicity, for example, and we were both kind of shaking our heads and money mindset and how that impacts our business and also our life. And so today I'm really excited to be able to have you here talking about shifting your money identity to scale with certain. So are you ready to jump in?
Absolutely. One of my favorite topics.
All right. Let's yes. go. All right. So there's a lot of jargon in the online space, but just collectively in the business world. And so before we jump into the topic today about shifting your money identity to scale with certainty, I'd like you just to define, what do you mean when you say money identity?
Great. So money identity, in my opinion, is how you see yourself in relation to wealth or money. So if you still subconsciously see yourself as the woman who has to work hard for every dollar that she earns, for example, or if you see yourself as someone who can or can't charge a particular price point, then that will become your reality. And that's really part of your identity. And you'll unconsciously just by being that person, you will potentially repel your dream clients or even undervalue what you do, which will then keep you exactly where you are. So when you shift your money identity to someone who leads with certainty, who owns the value that she has, her expertise, and so on, and expects big money, you know, that's the thing. We get what we expect, right? And so if we expect that and your messaging changes, then your energy changes and your buyers, your audience, your dream clients will then rise to actually meet you there.
No, good,
So
because it's always just good to start fresh. Because, like, again, sometimes I'll interview people and I'm thinking, are they on the same page as me? So this money identity clarity is super important. So thank you.
absolutely. It's really about seeing yourself as the successful future version of you and seeing that person now, right? Despite what your reality might actually look like as well.
And just to rewind a little bit, you talked about subconscious and unconscious, and that could be another lot of terminology that people may have heard, but they're like, I'm not too sure how I put the dots and everything together. Could you just want to talk a little bit about that and how it relates to money identity?
Yeah, so our subconscious is what runs the show 95% of the time, right? Whilst we consciously might be aware of being positive and not undercharging and not overgiving and having boundaries and all of those things and having a good relationship with money and so on, subconsciously, we have all of this old programming, conditioning, things from our childhood, things that we see on the media, these narratives that we kind of carry with us without even realizing that impact the way we show up and what we do and how we think and how we feel and all those sorts of things. And so it's really being aware of what's going on in our subconscious is the most important thing in order to change our relationship with money as well.
Thank you for that. I love that. And it's such a simple way to look at it, but so important just to make sure that everyone's on it. Now, money identity. I know you have done some amazing work with epic humans from around the world. Tell me a little bit about, you will have seen some common money beliefs that these women that you've been working with and have helped to scale their businesses over time. So, can you share with us some of those common money beliefs that you've seen that are holding them back in that time right before you can get them to scale? But, like, what is it before that's happening to these women? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think the most common ones that I see or hear are this belief that I need to work harder in order to earn more. That's a very, very common money belief that people have. Or people won't pay me that much. Or if I raise my prices, then I'll lose clients. People basically have these stories, these beliefs that just aren't true, right? They don't come from logic. They come from, like I mentioned before, past conditioning. Often it's tied to their childhood, or it could be a cultural thing too, right? Their upbringing. They've been told that don't be too much, or you're being selfish by asking for too much, or they have fears of being judged around having money, too much money. There's shame and guilt that sort of sits around money as well. Meanwhile, these sorts of subconscious beliefs quietly do impact our ability to earn money. We sabotage sales in sort of business. And with these beliefs also attract people like us, right? And so, not surprisingly, with those sorts of belief systems, you will hear, I can't afford it more often because that's we become a match to that, right? And so scaling or shifting your stories around money, it all starts with sort of expanding what you believe you are allowed to receive as well.
And you talk about this because I think there's a couple things there that I want to talk about is allowed to receive. I think people forget that receiving and being able to receive is just as important as giving. What are your thoughts about that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, it goes back to feeling deserving. Like we've been told from the time we were tiny little kids, if you're good, then Santa will come at Christmas. Such a simple, innocent story that parents tell their children can completely impact how we feel about receiving and the stories we have around receiving and being worthy of it and deserving of it and so on. So we need to be open to receiving and not feel like even receiving a compliment doesn't require us to, a lot of people block compliments because they don't know how to receive them. And it's the same thing with money, right? Because people feel like receiving comes with an obligation or there's something else attached to receiving when it simply doesn't have to be that way. It's just a story.
Absolutely. And I think even too, just sometimes noticing and catching ourselves what we're doing and how we respond, because I'm the same. I'm, as you know, at time of recording this right now, I'm in a hoodie, sweatpants, and slippers. You know, that's how I roll. You look very beautiful, by the way, but I just kind of roll and I'm like, people either love it or they don't. But I know when I go out and I'm actually got hair, makeup, or heels on, and people are like, oh my gosh, you look so good. I remember I was like almost deflecting back, like, oh, I showered today, or oh, you know, or it's not much, or you know, whatever it was. And I was like, well, hold on. That's me not be willing to receive those compliments, even though like it's no one, it was just a simple compliment, right? But I've had to work really hard to be able to go stop and just go, thank you so much. I received that. And I literally say, I receive your compliment, or I appreciate your compliment. But I too was blocking that for the longest time. And that's when I realized the importance of just being able to sit and receive in everyday goodness.
And this is especially an issue for women, and I find, because we're nurturers, we're givers, right? We like to put everybody else first, and we just want to give more than we receive. And receiving then naturally feels uncomfortable and feels like this is all about past conditioning and what we saw our mothers do. And if someone offers to buy you coffee, what does that actually mean? Can you just receive that coffee, or does that mean you have to then take them out for lunch?
Yes, like the yes.
Can we just not receive without having to give something back?
And I like that you use the word past conditioning. Again, something that I too had to be mindful of, because my parents filed bankruptcy not once, but twice. And that conditioning about being able to also sit with more money in my account, because I used to, every dollar that would come in, I would spend it because I could not hold money, because I was like, my subconscious, what you're, it's just going to get taken away. You're just going to lose it. So you might as well blow it now. So I had to really become aware of what that past conditioning and environmental factors that I had seen growing up was. But then another thing I just want to talk about is I also remember how people, when you do start to scale your business and you do start to make more money, not everyone is going to be welcoming of this. And I don't know what your thoughts are. I will look forward to hearing them. But it's like, you know, my family, they all still work 9 to 5, every single one of them. And I know when I would go back home to Canada, there's this one particular family member that always still says to this day, oh, how many drugs did you sell this month, Ange? Another 6-figure month. What was it? Was it crack this month? Was it meth? What was it? Like, they can't just be happy that I've made money. And then I'm like, because I believe you're choosing to still be in the 9 to 5. That's your choice, but I'm choosing to do this and have a bigger impact. So again, those comments that people make as you start to scale can be hurtful sometimes if you allow it to continue to eat at your soul. I no longer allow it, but I'm curious to know, like, what are your thoughts? What have you seen with the women that you have worked with that also that notion of scaling, they're starting to receive, they understand they're enough, but then they get sideswiped by some of the people they love the most because they're not on the same trajectory as them anymore. What are your thoughts?
I've got so much to say on that. And absolutely, we have, going back to the past conditioning and the experiences that we had in our own homes growing up, and the associations that we have with money, and the relationship we have with money, because it's possible that, and I certainly experienced this myself, money was often an issue that my parents may argue about, whether my mum was overspending or whether the credit card was maxed. It felt like it was the reason for arguments at home, And so, of course, when you associate money with arguments, then, and you don't consciously change that narrative and choose to believe differently and just see it as a circumstantial issue and not necessarily a rule in life. Anyone with money or anyone without money has arguments, or money results with overspending and then therefore ends up causing marital issues. That's not true, right? Because they're just circumstantial things. And of course, problems can arise with or without money, right? And I think it was just before you start on this podcast, we talked about once you've reached a certain level of success as well, it can feel quite lonely, because you have all the money in the world, and then suddenly you don't have the people around you who relate to how you make money. And you alluded to that about your family as well, because they don't understand it, they don't get it, and they think that you're doing some dodgy, scammy
Yes.
thing
Yep.
when you are legitimately changing lives and helping so many people, except we're doing it with so much more flexibility in the online space. I think entrepreneurship, it's for the only 5% of people, let's face it, really even consider entrepreneurship. Most people are just kind of quite content in 9 to 5, but entrepreneurs are a very unique breed.
And they see things through, like I said, they see things through a different lens. It's like even the fact, like the risk that entrepreneurs will take versus a 9 to 5er. And that's just like, no, it's a broad generalization, but I've seen it over the years of, supporting thousands of women, is that like there's this grit about entrepreneurs. There's this like failure is not an option. We'll find everything is figure outable, blah, blah, blah. Whereas the 9 to 5, they're like, meh, I don't really want to have to think about outside the box, or this feels too hard. I'm happy just to go. And that's okay. I'm happy just to roll in. Someone tells me what to do and roll back out. But as I was sharing with you before, I was working with a client this week. And one of the things that she said, I said, how many people do you know in your circle right now who has true wealth? And what I meant by that was wealth, meaning your health is wealth. I look at your relationships are wealth, your time is wealth, and obviously financial wealth. She's like, actually, not many. And then her business partner looked at her and she's like, I can't name one. And then the other girl goes, I can't either, actually. She's like, there's moments of happiness that they have, but she says, collectively, she said, they don't have wealth. And so then I said, again, you can choose to remain in your 9 to 5 job, but if you're telling me you want financial freedom and time freedom and all that, you got to understand that you're going to have to risk things to be able to get there. And I said to her, job, I remember when someone said to me years ago, job stands for just over broke, but broke in emotion and relate, like on so many levels, because you're building someone else's empire, right? So again, this mindset, if we go back to that you talk about, I feel is so important, because the world of entrepreneurship is hard. It's not for the lighthearted at all. And you've got to be able to have a strong mind to be able to scale that business and work through some of these childhood experiences that you've talked about, the past conditioning, because you don't have to, but then whatever, you're going to be in the same spot you are a year from now.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, because I think entrepreneurship, business, scaling, any of those sorts of, it's as much an inner game, if not mostly an inner game. And
Yes.
of course, strategy plays a part. Of course, it does make a difference having the right strategy and implementing it well and so on. But the mindset plays a huge part. Some people are actually addicted to struggle.
100%. 100.
They feel comfortable. It's familiar. It's what they know. And it really is. This is such an important conversation to have, because people, they are where they are because of their belief system and their inability to shift that, or choosing not to shift that. And of course, entrepreneurship comes with risk. There isn't the same level of security as you might have in a stereotypical sort of 9 to 5 corporate job, but then the upside is just 100 times better. You can't even compare it.
And I want to also mention that you talk about the addiction that people have, right? And I remember I just started dating my current partner, Grant, who's an absolute gem. And we had our first date. And I remember getting, and he was polite and he was kind and good looking. And I remember getting in the car and I was driving away and I was thinking to myself, oh, I'll probably never, I won't go back out with that guy. And, but I was like, but why? He's so kind and so polite and so calm and whatever. But I was addicted to the chaos of my past relationships. So in that moment, I actually felt so uncomfortable, so unsafe, right? Because it was like, oh, this is what calm is. This is what mutual conversation is and respect is. So I remember driving home going, oh my gosh, I don't want to actually throw this away. And then a year went in and I was like, I could have made one of the biggest mistakes of my life by saying we're not going to meet again if I hadn't done the inner work. Like I've done 50 plus rounds of hypnotherapy. I work with a healer. I do an enormous amount. Plus, I'm a healer myself and all that. But if I hadn't gone and made space to do this inner game that you're talking about, I would have fucked things up in my life, not just my business, do you mean, but collectively. And this is why I think it's so important to make the space to understand what your childhood has influenced you. Because you can, once you're aware, you can then choose to make change or choose not to make change. You can't unsee or unhear things, but most of us don't make the time or space to do that. So I want to ask a couple more questions around scaling and mindset, because as I think people are knowing, you and I could talk forever, I think, on any topic at this stage, Anne. But
Yeah,
one of the
I
things that
agree.
I often hear often about is pricing. Women are scared around pricing. And so what role do you feel self-worth plays in setting prices? And how can women begin to kind of untangle their worth from what they charge? Quick question. Have you ever spoken at an event, felt amazing, got great feedback, and then absolutely nothing happened? No leads, no bookings, no new clients, just applause and then absolute crickets. I see it happen all the time, not because your talk wasn't good, but because most talks aren't built to do anything. That's why I have to tell you about Booked in 20, a powerhouse workshop created by my friend Jacqueline Brooker, who is a certified speaking professional and founder of Any Given Tuesday. Jacqueline has helped hundreds of entrepreneurs turn 20-minute talks, such as panels, guest spots, networking events, into four, five, and six figures of revenue. And this workshop unpacks her full framework. So whether you speak often or know you need to start speaking, this will help you turn your voice into a serious business tool. She normally charges $100 for this particular workshop, but she's joined up with me to give you the opportunity to access this completely free. Just head to the show notes at angelahenderson.com.au, click on podcast episode 443, and you'll be able to access this workshop absolutely free. And watch how your next talk changes everything.
I mean, it's huge, right? No one can value us more than we value ourselves. It's like self-love. No one can actually love us more than we love ourselves. It's just impossible. And so if we choose to price something low, then we can't ever expect anyone to value us higher than that, right? And especially in the high ticket space, for example, a premium buyer is not looking for the cheapest offer, right? If you want to go out for the best dinner, you're not going to go to McDonald's and have the cheapest food, right? You're going to go to the best restaurant and you would expect to pay a premium price, right? It's the same if you're flying first class or economy. And it's not that you're going to the same destination on the same plane. It's just it's a premium experience and you're paying for the bigger seats and for the comfort and for being near the front of the plane and for the prestige and so many other things, right? So when it comes to pricing your offers as well, if you don't actually see it as worth it and you're not willing to put a price tag that demonstrates its worth, then no one else is going to see the value in it either. And it's a perception too when it comes to pricing. There's been studies that have been done where the exact same wine has been labeled differently and positioned differently as a premium wine, a mid-range wine, and a cheap wine. And it's been exactly the same drink on the inside. But the people who tasted it perceived that the premium wine was the best and the cheapest wine was the worst, you know? So that's sort of going a little bit away from mindset and more into positioning and strategy. But it's the same thing. It's kind of like if you don't believe that you're worth getting paid more, then no one else is going to believe it and no one's going to pay you more. So your pricing is reflective of your self-worth.
And I also feel from an energetic perspective, like attracts like, right? So it's like if that's what you're putting out, you're probably also going to call in people who resemble potentially their self-worth isn't where they want it to be, whatever, insert. And so again, it's so important to be able to sit with what is your self-worth? What does that look like? How does your mindset play into it? Because again, your pricing is your rules. But what to me again are you attracting by pricing things in different ways? So thank you for that. I thought it would be important just to talk about it briefly because it's such an important piece on a day-to-day and a question I get asked often. Now, when we
Yeah,
look
absolutely.
at decisions around money, decisions are happening every minute. Us women, we have decision fatigue. There's millions of decisions we have to make on any given week. But when you think about decisions around money and how this is happening for other amazing business owners on any given day, how can women tell the difference between making an aligned financial decision versus one that's driven by fear and scarcity? Because fear and scarcity comes in so often versus Nope, I'm going to come from a place of abundance. This is an aligned financial decision. So, what are your thoughts about, how can they tell the difference when they start to make these aligned financial decisions versus driven by fear or scarcity?
I think you know, right? We all have our intuition and we know when something feels aligned. We know when we're speaking to the right service provider, they have the exact solution, they have proven results, and we want to work with them or hire them. And if we're making a decision based on price, then we're making it from a place of fear, as opposed to from a place of alignment. You know who the right service provider is when you're sort of purchasing a product or service. But sometimes that to me is the difference, right? You are making it from a place of fear, worried that what if I don't get my return on investment, as opposed to thinking this is the right person to support me on my journey or to help me with what it is that I desire.
Fantastic. And there's going to be people out there going, this is all good. And thanks, Inge, for the pep talk, right? But they're going to be like, but what are the practical ways that I can start stepping into my next level income, specifically around like without hustle or burnout? So I'm curious to know, like, what practical steps can they take today to start shifting their money mindset?
Great question. So I would say, I think we touched on this briefly earlier when we talked about the subconscious and the old conditioning and so on. And it's to really audit those stories, really observe the stories and notice what you say internally when you price something or when you receive something, whether it's money or a gift, or when you think about your next kind of even income goal. What are the thoughts? What comes up for you? Like making 100K next month, let's say. What are the immediate initial thoughts that come up? Because there's bound to be a whole lot of stories and negative beliefs that and limitations of the mind that come out. And so that I would say is the first step. The next step is then to kind of interrupt those thoughts and shift those thoughts, shift those beliefs. And get out of that sort of identity and step into the identity of your future self, the woman who has everything that she desires, has the money, is open to receiving, sets big income goals, and say, what would she think? What would she do? How would she act? And kind of really embody that identity now. And the third thing I would say is normalize wealth. Stop putting money on a pedestal. Stop and keeping it so far out of reach and making it like an impossible thing to get a hold of. And surround yourself with like-minded people, mentors, get in rooms where 100K months, $1 million months are normal, and in environments where wealth is just celebrated and it's not judged, and no one apologizes for the success that they've achieved. But we sort of see if it's possible for them, then it's possible for us. When you treat wealth like a natural extension of who you are, it stops feeling like something that has to be chased, that's out of reach, and really starts becoming something that we can easily attract.
No, I love it. And again, what I love too, though, is I'm a firm believer that the people that you surround yourself with will
Yeah.
either drag you up or drag you down. You know,
100%.
it's like I remember when I left the corporate world and I would still catch up with them on a regular basis. And it would be like, hey guys, how are you? What's going on? Like, I'd be so excited to see them. They're like, oh man, don't get us started. Shit day in the office. Aircon was broke. Plumbing was broke. Oh, Johnny did this shit again. And I was like, I went from 1000 level of energy to I was like, my whole body like felt that heaviness again. And I was like, oh man, how that sucks, right? And so surrounding myself with like people who are like not money, yes, but just like good humans. They don't even have to be making a shit ton of money, but the energy that they bring, they're really, again, they're coming from a place of abundance and they're always kind of looking for the positive. You know what I mean? Those are also important people to me because, yeah, they don't need to be making money to be in my circle. They just have to have a good attitude, right? Because that still just attracts everything else. But I do love the four steps that you talked about, auditing and just really observing those stories that are coming in, embodying the identity as if it's already happened, and that really stepping into that, normalizing wealth, hell yes, louder for those in the back. And then again, surrounding yourself with the right people. We talked before we press record about overcomplicating things. And some people, I look at this and I'm like, this is easy. But some people will be like, is this actually the strategy? This sounds too good to be true. Why is it so easy? And then they'll dismiss the strategy, Anne, because it doesn't come with 58, 8 million hours of work and hardness and heaviness. What are your thoughts about that? Because God forbid we have things that feel light and easy in our world. Any thoughts you have? Because that's where I could see some people going, just audit ourselves, embody it, normalize it, surround yourself. That's it. Next, tell me your thoughts.
My thoughts are, I suppose it goes back to that mindset that we touched on before, where we have this belief that it has to be hard. Money has to be earned through hard work. You know, that's what we've probably been told for most of our life, or we hear that around us all the time. And so, what I find is that most people that I work with are incredibly skilled, they're capable, they're often even experts in their field. And in some cases, I've worked with people who've even built a level of success and they've started their business and they've built a level of success. And maybe they've plateaued, like even at that six-figure mark or thereabouts. But they assume at that point, or even in some cases when they're starting out, that they have to do more. It can't be easy. If it's too easy, then there's this guilt and there's this shame and there's this kind of. They feel like they're almost lazy. And so then they complicate things and they start creating more offers and they get on more platforms and they're kind of being show monkeys, I don't know, trying to get more visibility or whatever it is, right? And it just scatters their energy, it dilutes their authority. They end up on this kind of hamster wheel of half-assing everything that they're doing because they're not actually doing anything really, really well. Whereas when you keep business simple, when you really stick to one or two core things and do it really, really well, rinse and repeat, just do less, but do it well. That's scalable. I quite honestly think you can easily get to $500,000 with one offer and go all in on one platform and just have a really simple system, but under the guise of being multi-passionate or having ADHD or whatever the reason might be, or their human design, people complicate things.
And listen, I've got ADHD, but I can tell you, my
Go on.
podcast is one of my consistent drivers. I've been doing it for 7 years. People also say, Ange, you've got ADHD. How can you do one-on-one coaching? Don't you get bored? Like, how can you stay so focused? And I'm like, if I had a coach on the same topic every day, I don't think that would work. But every call, because everyone that I work with has a personalized plan based on business model, thoughts, mindset, whatever. It's new to me every single day. So my mind still goes, but they're like, but you have ADHD. You shouldn't be able to do it. And I was like, well, if I continue to say that story, then I probably wouldn't be able to do one-on-one because I would talk myself out of it, but it works for me. And so, but consistency, and I didn't start on all the platforms. I had Facebook, then I layered in Instagram a year later, then I layered in the podcast. And it was also looking at the ROI. Is there an ROI on this or not? Because if not, then why am I doing it? And then am I in alignment with it? I still love showing up for the podcast. There might be a day I don't, and then maybe I'll stop. But for now, we've been going for 7 years. It still feels light and easy. And I know the ROI is there because when people listen to the podcast and they get on a call with me, it's almost 100% conversion versus dancing around on TikTok. I'm not even on TikTok, but I'll use it. Like it does it. Well, Instagram's a fine example. Yes, people like looking at stories and stuff, but I don't get a huge influx of people that say they found me on Instagram. It's normally speaking or podcasts. So I agree, simplicity scales, keep shit consistent, and it doesn't have to be hard. Now, listen, this has been absolutely epic. Like I said, I think you realize we both could talk for hours about a variety of different topics. But for those listeners wanting to connect with you, Anne, where can they find you? Do you have any master classes or anything coming up, any workshops? How can these humans connect with you?
So I'm most active on Facebook myself. So if you look out for Anne Ryan, my Facebook, the end part is anne.ryan.1111. That's my personal profile, and you'll find me there. My website is anneryanstrategist.com. I'm not launching anything particularly new at the moment. My business is super simple. I have an evergreen offer and I work one-to-one, same as you, Ange, and I love that. I get so much variety just through the types of incredible humans that I get to work with, and I don't also really teach a cookie cutter solution. It's very much a personalized, customized strategy for every person I work with. And so that's what makes it fun.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. But we do have one final question that I always like to ask before we wrap up, and that is, Anne, looking back on your business journey, what do you know now that you wish you knew when you first started out in business?
Oh, that's a really good question. I would say that it gets to be easy if you allow it. Because I did start off with funnels and way too much stuff too. But within the first year, I simplified it through necessity because I have an offline business and a lot going on. But yeah, simplicity is definitely scalable and it really does get to be easy if we allow it.
Dude, what a great way to end it. It can really be easy if you allow it. Now, if you are listening out there today and you need a little bit of Anne Ryan in your world, please make sure to head to her website. We will also have all of her links over on the show notes at angelahenderson.com.au. But for now, I hope you have an amazing day no matter where you are in the world. And I look forward to you joining us for another awesome episode of the Angela Henderson Online Business Show. Thanks again, Anne.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Angela Henderson Online Business Show, www.angelahenderson.com.au.